Good afternoon. Thank you for making it out here today. I'm Sean Hargreaves.
I'm Max McMullen.
And we're here to talk about some tooling for Direct3D 12 on Windows. So a brief introduction to why this talk exists. Direct3D 12 has been out for a couple of years now. There are already several titles that have shipped using it. It's a real API. It's really being used. One of the big changes in D3D 12 from previous iterations of graphics APIs is that it is a much lower level programming model than we've used in previous DirectX versions. There are a lot of advantages to a lower level programming interface. This gives developers more control, more ability to get better performance, to really tune how things work for the needs of your titles. But with more control also comes more control to get things wrong. Direct3D 12 introduced a whole category of new ways to shoot yourself in the foot that never previously used to exist. And one of the pieces of feedback we heard loud and clear from early 12 adopters was that better tools were needed to help with this. So that's what this talk is about. There are really three tools that will help you with Direct3D 12 development, and we're going to go through each of these in order. The debug layer is a very mature piece of technology. There's been some equivalent of this for every version of Direct3D. This is a layer that you can turn on that validates parameters on the CPU when you issue calls into Direct3D. It's pretty low overhead, so it's reasonable to just leave this on all the time in debug builds of your game. But as 12 opens up more complicated and advanced programming models, there's a whole category of problems that the debug layer cannot catch because they happen inside the GPU. So the improvement that we have for this in 12 is a new thing called GPU validation, which actually validates your workload directly on the GPU itself while shaders are executing. Max is going to talk about that. And then the third tool that we're going to talk about today is Pix on Windows, which is a tool that's existed for, many years in many different variations, most recently on the Xbox One. And earlier this year, we brought the Xbox One version of Pix to Windows to help with DirectX 12 debugging and profiling. And so we're going to talk about that and do some demos. And with that, I will hand over to Max to talk about the debug layer.
Thanks, Sean. So as Sean mentioned, we have multiple tools for helping you get greater efficiency developing your engines on D3D 12. And really, they're all meant to work together. Each one addresses a different class of failure mode in using the API. And really, the way to think about it is it's not, oh, I'm going to use this one. It's about how you know, when you add features, are you always running the debug layer? Once you've run the debug layer, do you have, you know, unit testing and componentization so you can then turn on GBV and validate that the sequence of operations you're telling the GPU are coherent on the GPU timeline? And then third, when you want the really powerful UI, the ability to investigate whole frame, both in terms of correctness of your rendering algorithms and performance, then Pix can take those previously two validated stages and produce really rich information that you can go and improve your engine with. So as Sean also mentioned, the debug layer is probably the most familiar part of this tooling story for you. It's existed in D3D since D3D 10. Prior to that, there were different solutions. And the goal of the debug layer was always, let's validate, you know, at that moment when you're calling the API with the CPU, are the parameters you're calling in with correct for the state that is stored on the rendering context? And with 10 and 11, you know, the currently understood state on the CPU is actually also reflective of the sequence of state on the GPU. So you got a really good end-to-end validation with just the debug layer. I'll talk about how 12 has changed that in a bit with GBV. So the debug layer still exists in 12, and there's still a lot we can validate on the CPU timeline. And it's still your go-to consistent validation that you should just always be running. You know, every modification you make into your engine calling D3D, just make sure you've run it through the debug layer and looked for clean output. If you have dirty output from the debug layer, you know, error message about how you're calling, the sequence of calls, it greatly increases the chance that the later validation stages are not going to give you good results either. So you want to get, you know, clean output debug layer, clean output GBV, and then use Pix to dive into the stages later about tuning your engine. So that's the debug layer. Strong recommend this is your go-to first stage. How to get it? I just want to talk about this a bit. Things have changed over time with D3D. You know, we used to do the DXSDK as completely parallel, separate environment, but we got a lot of value out of combining and having a simpler SDK story. But with that change, we lost the frequent ship vehicle of providing, you know, new debug layers on a monthly, not OS release cadence. With 12, we've actually brought back that frequent update cadence. With 12, we can simultaneously keep the debug layers in sync with the OS. So if we change the operating system, you know, from the anniversary update last summer to the creators update coming out soon, we can, like, on update, ship you a new SDK layers that's coherent with those new OS features. So the way we've integrated SDK layers is there's a set of optional features in Windows. Internally, we call them features on demand, but you'll see them in the UI just as optional features. That can be pulled into the OS in a number of ways. One, when you run Visual Studio, Visual Studio can automatically pull in those graphics tools. Second, if you happen to not be using Visual Studio or you have some more advanced setups for developing and debugging, you can manually install the graphics tools add-on feature with the steps listed in option two. Third option, let's say you represent a developer at a large studio. Not only do you have a huge number of graphics engineers working on your engine, but you might have automated test passes where every night you're validating all the materials and the objects that could be used in your engine. There's a command line option for doing automation where you can just script an OS setup that pulls in the tools and then and have your test passes install the debug layer. One caveat, that last bullet about always run Windows Update, that's just a temporary suggestion. We know we have a bug in terms of the sync of the DLL update process, so please make sure after you install, you force a Windows Update pass to make sure the OS and the binary are finally coherent. This will be fixed, and that step won't be necessary in an upcoming OS release. So how you use it? Similar to 11, there is both a programmatic code way of turning on the debug layers, as well as a control panel way of turning them on. The options really are fairly similar. The one difference with the programmatic way in 12, you have to turn on the debug layers before creating your device object. This relates to a couple factors where we have a singleton device now instead of n devices in the process, and a desire to keep the CPU overhead for end user machines at zero. So, you know, we can support inserting this debugging interface if it's set before device creation and have those two properties about, you know, zero overhead. The control panel, same as before, you can set a process name, you can set a folder and subdirectory, and that will turn on the debug layer. The output of the debug layer is in the output window of your debugger. So that's the debug layer. Like I said, it's mostly what you're familiar with from the past with a few changes over time. Really what's new here is GPU-based validation. We first shipped this last summer as a beta, and it's now fully supported by us. We've you know, debugged all the driver problems and in the feature support, and generally we have full-fledged AAA game engines that can run against it without problem. So I mentioned earlier, 11 and 10, you knew everything on the CPU timeline about the coherence of your state. What really changed with 12 is to enable multi-threading and to enable bindless rendering, we had to tease apart knowledge of the render state, where for any given thread generating commands on a command list, there are some things we can validate about the coherence of that, but to really validate across command list boundaries would introduce serialization that we didn't want to put into the API. So the only way we can know about the coherence of rendering commands and the coherence of resource state is by doing the validation either at submission time or even execution time on the GPU when you have multiple queues for submitting work. And that's where GPU validation helps. We're actually injecting validation code both into the command list and into the PSO objects to ensure that barriers, descriptors, resource initialization is all coherent. And those are some of the classic errors that GBV catches. You know, looking at AAA titles that have come out in 12 so far, common mistakes are failing to initialize a descriptor, initializing to a different type than what the shaders expect, accessing descriptor heaps out of bounds, like doing arrayed processing through a descriptor heap. Those can all be caught with the patching that we do on every PSO object with GBV. Turning on GBV, very similar to how you turn on just the debug layer in general. You know, right after you enable the debug layer, you insert a second call, and that is to turn on GPU-based validation. That second call will then enable all the shader patching and the commandless patching, as well as some tracking on QSubmit that enables this enhanced validation. Now, because we're validating on the GPU, it isn't as simple looking at the debug output. It's not like when you step over an API call, you see the error that's induced. Instead, we report the errors back when the GPU has actually executed those commands. There's a ring buffer of error messages being produced by the GPU. We're doing message deduplication, and then those output messages get sent back to the CPU and reported on the debug output. So being able to map GPU error conditions back to the CPU timeline is critical. And one of the features we have that enable that is our support of PIX events. So it's just yet another reason to start instrumenting your engine if you haven't already with, you know, verbose indications of where you are in your rendering pipeline. We can, in the GBV, we know what the last PIX event was, and so if we see an error, like when your pixel shader is accessing a descriptor and you haven't initialized that descriptor, we can say that, well, when this draw call was generated, this is the current PIX marker for that API call on the CPU timeline. And that should let you isolate which function and which draw actually eventually resulted in a GPU timeline error. So let me show you a brief demo of GBV. So what I have here, just Surface Book, and currently loaded is the D312 dynamic indexing sample. So the dynamic indexing sample, you know, uses descriptor indexing to pick the material for one of the cities you see in the screen. And, you know, just imagining a typical dev scenario, I've been messing with the sample and I edited a bunch of locations and I was trying to restore it back to where I started and I might have missed a step in restoring something. So start debugging and I see something that's a little off. Most things look good in these objects, but in this back corner, it's kind of suspicious. It really shouldn't be black. And I'm not seeing any errors, though. So I have the GPU, the debug layer turned on, but it's telling me that my API call sequence and the CPU timeline, at least, is correct. So let's turn on GBV. So we can see here, let me pause this, you can see it's just every frame and it's generating more error messages, but we're getting, the instrumented shaders are actually detecting on the GPU that our shader is accessing an uninitialized descriptor. Just to walk through here, there's two classes of message coming out. This D312 message, let me highlight it. This is just telling us that, you know, we have an error and the PIX marker that it corresponds with is the render draw cities part of my application. And then following, we can see that, okay, on a draw call on the GPU, it's an uninitialized descriptor. There's some indication about where the descriptor was. Let me maximize this. There's an indication where the descriptor is in the descriptor heap and descriptor table. The type is an SRV, so we're accessing an uninitialized shaded resource view. It's in the pixel shader. There's the actual HLSL file. And there's additional hints in terms of the variable being referenced in the code. And if you name the object, we'll actually show you the object name here. And it truly is, it's an uninitialized descriptor. So I happen to know that that render call, let me stop the debugging. So I know that those SRVs for draw cities are initialized in the beginning of the function. And it looks like, you know, I was messing with this and I changed my loop, so I wasn't initializing the first shader resource view. So that's just a shortened example of how you can walk back to where you might have made a mistake in your initialization. So if I start debugging now, GBV is still turned on. So here we are. It's correct in the back corner now. And no error messages coming from GBV. So that's just a brief demo of how we can detect error conditions on the GPU timeline of the GBV. Some caveats to GBV. Shader patching can take a while. If you throw a full-fledged AAA game frame at it, it can take a long time to validate. You know, we get a few FPS running on a high-end GPU with some AAA frames. And the patching, the shader compile time is extensive. So really, both the way to use GBV and the debug layers is make sure you're running it incrementally as you develop your engine, as you add new content. And make sure you have test modes where you can isolate each effect. That way, it's a much faster turnaround time where you can just run that particular part of the frame and see how it's performing. So it's both the upfront patch time is slow, and also the actual GPU and CPU time takes more. There are a bunch of knobs and dials. We'll have a YouTube video from my dev team describing like all those knobs and dials. It's a little extensive to go over today, but you can trim back the validation we do to get faster execution. In terms of features, it supports almost the full set of rendering operations in D312. We do not have support for execute indirect with root descriptors right now. That's something that we're looking at adding eventually. It's just not in our capability at this time. And we have limited support for placed resources. So if you're doing multiple resources with overlapping VAs, we can't disambiguate which resource yet, but that's also something we're looking at adding. The last place of support that we're missing is multi-GPU, but typically these classes of errors are not unique to multi-GPU. Usually you'll find them all when you're doing single GPU development. But as we see developers using this and running into multi-GPU unique problems, we will absolutely add new tools to debug layers in GBV to help you catch them. You know, our goal here is really, we want D312 to be the most efficient API for developers to use for low-level API content. And with that, I'll hand off to Sean.
Thank you, Max. So, Pix on Windows. Pix has a long history on the Xbox console. I first encountered it, I think, in 2002 on the original Xbox. There was a version of Pix on PC way back in the DX9 days that used to ship in the DirectX SDK that was basically a debugging tool. It didn't really do much to help with performance investigations. Since then, there have been versions of Pix for the Xbox 360 and most recently the Xbox One. And earlier this year, we brought the Xbox One flavor of Pix to Windows, focused on D3D12 development. Originally, I think Pix stood for Performance Investigator on Xbox. That acronym really doesn't make sense now that it's on Windows, so it's just become a name. It's just a thing called Pix. We released a beta of the Windows Pix back in January. Since then, we've updated it twice with bug fixes and some new features. We plan on updating this tool very rapidly, so please keep an eye on the blog. Subscribe to the feed if you want to get notified when new versions come out. We've actually been testing Pix on Windows for several months before that public release, working with some real titles to shake loose any issues. I know some of the people we worked with are here today, so thank you for your help getting Pix to the state it's in now. Pix works by taking a capture from your game, and then it can analyze that capture to determine interesting things. There are currently 5 types of captures supported on Windows. We have GPU captures, timing captures, function summary captures, which give you information about CPU usage per function, and Colgraph captures dive deeper into the performance of a single function on the CPU, and then memory allocation captures. I assume you can guess what those do. In this talk, I'm going to focus on the first 2 types. No offense to the other 3, they are excellent, but this is a Direct3D talk, and the other 3 types are really about CPU performance. So the first question you're probably asking is, why do we have 2 capture types, both focused on GPU? And the reason for that is this equation. This is a test of whether we have any physicists in the audience. My team was confused by this when I did a dry run. This is the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, a famous result from quantum mechanics, which in simplified form basically states that you can measure the position of a particle or its velocity, but not both at the same time. More precisely, the more accurately you know one of these things, the less accurately it's possible to know the other. And this absolutely applies to GPU profiling. And the reason's kind of obvious. GPUs use insane amounts of memory and memory bandwidth. And if your game is any good, you're probably using all of the memory and all of the bandwidth. In fact, if you're reaching for Pix to profile your game, you might be using a little bit more than all of the bandwidth, and you're trying to figure out how to get that back within limits. So if we come along and start meticulously logging every single thing that happens, well, we're going to totally mess up your performance and end up doing something that has no relation to how your game was actually running before we started measuring it. So we have 2 capture types. We can either measure time, or we can measure what happened. We really can't measure both at the same time. Timing captures are the first part of this. They're like one extreme on this continuum. A timing capture records when everything happened. And to be able to accurately record when thing happened, it has to do that with very minimal overhead. And that means we really can't record what happened, because we're just recording timestamps, and we have to be extremely unintrusive in our doing of that. So we can record when threads executed. We can record call stacks from when context switches happened on the CPU. We can record when the GPU processed rendering work. We can record which GPU engine, if you're using async compute or copy queues. We can also correlate GPU work with when the CPU previously generated those drawing instructions. But we can't actually really tell you what that work was. We can just say, okay, there were 15,000 draw calls, and draw call 700 took a really long time. And if that's useful to you, then you're a better developer than anyone I've probably ever spoken to be in control enough of your rendering to understand which actual piece of work that was. So to really make sense of this data, you need to instrument your game with markers to label, okay, which draw call was the 700. The way you do this is using the Pix event runtime. To get good results from Pix, you need to put some extra calls into your game to tell Pix which bits of code are which. This comes from a header file called pix3.h, and it's a pretty simple API. You call pix begin event at the start of something that's interesting to instrument, and that takes a printf-style format string. Then you do some work, whatever it may be, and then when you're done, you call pix end event. It's important to notice you do need to use pix3.h, not pix.h. Pix.h ships in the Windows SDK. That is an older implementation that's not compatible with Pix. So you get the new pix3.h from the WinPix event runtime package on nuget.org and add that to your project. An equivalent way to add this, you can also use an API pix scoped event. That's exactly the same thing as pix begin event, but it will use C++ destructors to automatically mark the end when it goes out of scope. So I'm going to do a quick demo of what timing captures look like. So this is Pix on Windows. This is a timing capture that I have open. And you can see in here, I have a bunch of things in the event list that have labels on them. So scene render is a group. This is a Pix event that I put around all of the rendering code. This actually, the D3D sample comes pre-instrumented with these events. Inside scene render, we have particle update, Z prepass, generate screen space ambient occlusion, main render, particle render. Inside the main render, we have a shadow map and a color. And you can see for each of these, we have a start time and a duration, which are CPU timing. Then we have a GPU start time and a GPU duration. If you want to get a little bit more detail on this, you can tab across to the timeline. And this will give you a hugely zoomed out view. I actually captured like 10 frames of this app. So if I zoom in on a little subregion, I'll select that and say zoom to selection. So each of these lanes here, I have a 3D lane, which is pretty busy. You can see the 3D pipe was running pretty much flat out on the GPU. There is a copy lane, but it wasn't doing much work. And then modelviewer.exe is my main game executable. And that did a chunk of work here, and then it was idle for a really long time. So immediately you can tell this game is massively GPU bound. I can start digging into things. OK, this was a dispatch. If I select that in the GPU lane, it will also select over here in the CPU when that piece of work was generated. So you can immediately see the latency of how long it took for the GPU to get around to processing that dispatch after the CPU added it to a queue. We can zoom in a little bit more detail. I'll select just that chunk of CPU work and zoom to selection again. So this is a classic flame graph type UI. It's labeled by pix markers. So this was my scene render. Digging in a little bit, that was the particle update. Over here was the Z prepath. I can zoom right down to see individual dispatches and draws. So the better you label your regions, the more useful this user interface is going to be. GPU captures are the opposite. So timing captures are great for getting a high-level view of how things are running, where's your time going. Once you get as far as, OK, my Z prepass seems like it's taking way too long, you should probably, at that point, switch to a GPU capture to really understand what's going on inside that piece of rendering work. GPU captures are the opposite end of the continuum of how much data we log. We log absolutely everything. All of the API calls that were issued, all of the parameter data that went into them, all of the textures, all of the buffer contents. As you can imagine, that can be gigabytes of data. Logging all of this stuff is not fast, and therefore, timing while we do it is completely meaningless. If we did try to record CPU timing information while taking a GPU capture, we would accurately record every single time that we're bottlenecked by file system write speed. But when we've captured all this data, we can replay it. We can reissue the same set of API calls. And that enables a ton of things. We can debug. We can dig into your play up to a certain point and then inspect state, see what happened, pull back the contents of render targets halfway through a frame. We can change things and play back the sequence of calls again with modifications. And we can also gather timing data and interesting counters. We're not measuring timing in the context of how your real game ran, but we can just take one draw call that you're interested in and play it back a whole bunch of times in isolation and look at all sorts of interesting things about how long that ran. So GPU captures are actually useful for performance as well as debugging, but as a kind of post-analysis outside of your game. So I'm also going to demo what GPU captures look like in Pix. And I'm actually going to start by taking a brand new GPU capture from scratch. So here I have the connection UI in Pix. At the moment, I'm connected to the local machine. Pix also supports remoting. For a lot of timing data, it's a good idea to remote to a second PC so that the Pix user interface itself is not running on the same machine that you're trying to measure timing data on. We've tried to minimize the impact of that, but hey, you know, we're rendering a UI that also uses the GPU. But for this demo, I'm just going to run on my local machine. The first step is to select my target process. I can launch a UWP application or a Win32 application. In this case, I'm going to launch the Mini Engine app that is one of the DirectX samples. So I have here a launch button, and up comes Mini Engine. I can move around, you see. Even though Pix is attached at this point and is recording a bunch of information, but it still performs fine. So I tab back to Pix. Next to GPU capture, I'm going to click the capture a frame button. And I have a capture. Here I have a thumbnail of the frame. I can click that thumbnail to load it into Pix. And here I have an event list that looks kind of similar to the one that you saw for timing captures. It understands the same groups. So I have the scene render. Inside of this, I have it broken down into main render, render shadow map, render color. Inside here, there are a bunch of draw instance calls. If I select one of those calls, I can go see what parameters that call took in more detail. Pix has a whole bunch of views. It's a very flexible user interface. I'm demoing it here at fairly small size to fit on a projector that you can hopefully see all the way in the back. For real local use, I strongly recommend a 2 or 3 monitor system. It's great to spread the UI out, and the more screen space, the better this is going to be. So the way to reconfigure the UI, you go up here to the Views button in the top right, and you can drag out all kinds of different views and dock them wherever you want. So I'm going to pull out event details, and this will now show me all of the parameters to that draw call that I have selected. I can go look at other things, like look at this resource barrier, what barriers were passed to it, what type of transition was it. I can follow links to what object that barrier took place. So I can immediately just go and kind of look through what my app did. If I want to start digging into a bit more detail, there's a whole bunch of different pieces of UI. I can actually analyze warnings here in the warnings tab. This is integrated with the debug layer and SDK layers and GPU validation. So I have 2 buttons to run the debug layer over my capture or run GPU validation. The nice thing about doing this inside of Pix is that it can actually then bring up a UI rather than just printing out like Max showed you. It can hyperlink directly to the event that caused the warning. There's a bit of a catch-22 there, though, that this is using these features inside of Pix is great if you were able to take a capture of your app. The problem is that if your app is doing something that's just completely busted and invalid, Pix might not be able to capture it. So if you're able to capture it, try running the validation inside of Pix. That will tell you interesting things. If it crashes or fails to take a capture at all, try running the validation outside of Pix, and there's a very good chance that whatever the debug layer is complaining about is why Pix couldn't capture it. For more interesting debugging, I can switch to the pipeline tab, which brings up this UI down here. And you'll see that's completely empty. The reason for this is that I haven't started analysis yet. All that Pix has done so far is load your trace and parsed it, but it hasn't actually replayed the commands on the GPU. So to do this, I click the Start Analysis button near the top right, and this will now fire up a Direct3D12 device and replay my rendering code. And now, if I come down and select one of these draw calls, you'll see the pipeline populates with a ton of information. So I can view the IA output for that draw. That one's not very interesting. Let's try a different one. There's a good one. So I can look at what the mesh was that this draw call was drawing. I can move it around. I can go down and look what came out of the vertex shader. Here are all the inputs and outputs for all of my vertices. I can inspect the shader itself. Here's the HLSL source for that draw call. Here's the DX bytecode that that was compiled into. I can also, if my driver is supporting this feature, I can actually go and look at the hardware format disassembly for what the driver compiled that shader into. That's going to be a different syntax for every type of GPU and every IHV. The reason you're not seeing anything there today is that this is the NVIDIA GPU in my Surface Book, and I actually need a special DLL for NVIDIA to enable that disassembly. And there's a link on the Pix blog where you can ask NVIDIA for access to that DLL. I can go and look at what resources were bound. Here's my texture. Here's the normal map that this draw call used. Here's the screen state ambient occlusion image. So I can inspect all of the inputs to that shader operation. I can also go look at the render target at that point in the scene. Over here in the render target viewer, I have a number of visualizers I can turn on to get more data about how the render target's working. I can look at overdraw. You may think this is a bug. I did the first time I tried it on this sample. This sample actually uses a Z prepass. So the overdraw visualizer is telling you exactly what you would expect for a Z prepass. It's monochrome because every pixel was drawn exactly once. The depth complexity visualizer is similar to overdraw, but it shows things that failed the Z test as well as passed it. So that actually shows you, how much real overdraw is happening, ignoring the Z prepass. If I go back to the regular image, I can right-click on a pixel. This brings up the Show Pixel History UI. This will pop up a view that shows me all of the operations that affected that pixel in the course of the frame. So I can see here the clear render target view is the first thing that touched it, and that set it to black. And then draw number 331 drew to it and changed it to this brown shade. If I right-click on that draw, I can then actually go into the shader debugger. This will bring up the debugging UI. It's very similar to a Visual Studio type code debugger. I have step, go, step in, step over. I can step through the code. Down the bottom here, it's showing the locals as I step through the execution of the shader. And I can switch to the DX bytecode if you want to debug at that level. And now the view will switch to showing registers rather than HLSL source. And again, I can continue to step through the DX bytecode. So you can flip back and forth between HLSL and bytecode level debugging pretty easily. So there's a lot of interesting things I can do there. I can also trace the history of resources. If I want to go back to the shadow map, if I think there's a bug in that, and I want to see where did that come from, let's make the pixel history UI go away briefly. Make that a little bit bigger. So if I'm looking at this drawer and I'm saying, okay, the problem, the bug I have in this drawer is my shadow map just doesn't seem right, I can go up here and say show resource history, and that will do a scan and find all of the places in the frame that that resource was referenced. It's a pretty big list, so let's make it a little bit bigger. So starting at the top of the frame, I have a whole bunch of operations that wrote to it. If I select one of those and jump to that in the event list on the left, yep, that was inside my render shadow map. As I scroll down, a whole bunch of drawers drew to that. Then there was a barrier that transitioned it to the read state, and then a whole bunch of reads. So I can see from that UI very quickly if my barrier wasn't correct, or perhaps the code that drew to it was drawing the wrong thing. So far, everything I've showed you is about debugging. You can also analyze performance data in here. If I go back to the main overview view, down in the bottom half of the screen, I have a button that says, click here to collect timing data. So I'm going to do exactly that. And Pix will whir and click for a second. It will warn me that, in fact, Pix.exe was using the GPU in the middle of that timing data collection, unsurprisingly, because I'm running the UI on the same computer as the game itself. Really, I should be remoting to get more accurate results here. If I was running Pix on a different machine to the analysis engine, then I would not have interfered and I would have more accurate data. But I'm going to ignore that and assume that the interference was pretty small. Where that warning really comes into play is if you accidentally left your game running in the background. That's going to massively mess up timing data. And obviously, you should kill it and recollect if you're doing anything like that. So now you'll see two things. In the event list, each of these draw calls has a column to the right of it that's been populated with numbers. This is the execution duration. That's what it sounds like, how long each draw call took. More interestingly, down the bottom, I have two timelines. I have this lane that's called the EOP lane, which is showing kind of simplified timings. And then I have these blue lines of the execution duration. So the reason we have two different types of timing view, GPUs are very, very parallel. You call a sequence of draws, but they all overlap, and everything's running simultaneously through the hardware. So these blue lines are our best approximation of what actually happened in terms of simultaneous execution of draws. Each of these lines corresponds to a single operation, and you can clearly see where work is stacking up. Like over here, there was one dispatch running, and nothing was going in parallel with it. Back here, there were a whole bunch of draw indexed instance calls running simultaneously. That view is great to get a sense of how much parallelism you're really getting out of the hardware. It's sometimes a little bit too much information if you're looking for a simplified overview. So this EOP lane at the top collapses all of that down and basically says, what would it look like in a hypothetical universe where the GPU was not parallel? This is not true, it's not real, it's not how things actually work, but it's a simplification that is sometimes useful. So the way that data is derived, we basically assume that an operation starts whenever the previous one finished. So we draw a bar for whatever the first thing you did was up until that one completed, and then assume that the execution has moved on to the second thing. Occasionally, you can see things in that view actually taking zero time if they ran in parallel and had completed before the previous guy even got done. But it's useful just to have a linear thing without stacking. So this can give you a ton of information about performance. It can show you where times are going, where the GPU is spending time. It's obviously you're not getting any CPU data from this, and you're still missing the kind of deeper level dive of, you know, what happened. Okay, so I found the draw call that's taking too long. I can hypothesize about why that might be. I can look at my state. I can maybe find some bugs. But if you really, really want to go further, you need to have deeper visibility into the GPU than just time. On Xbox, Pix has been able to do this for years because it's a console where we own the driver and the D3D runtime and the tool, so we can have very intimate knowledge back and forth. In the past, we have not been able to do this kind of thing on Windows, but today we're announcing that we are bringing low-level hardware counter information into Pix through a system of plugins. And the first of these I'm going to demo today is from NVIDIA. I think we have some NVIDIA people here today. Thank you very much for your help getting this as far as it is. So yeah, what we have, we've partnered with NVIDIA. Pix is able to collect hardware counters from very deep inside the GPU, so it can give a level of visibility into performance far, far more than just timing. Currently, we have about 300 different counters on NVIDIA GPUs. The kind of information we can collect is like how many cycles were spent on a draw call, even if a whole bunch of stuff was executing in parallel. The timeline lane in Pix can tell you, OK, this took this long, and another draw call started here and took this long. But you have no way to tell from that, was it the first draw call that was just saturating everything flat out using all of the shader cycles, and the second draw call seemed like it took a really long time just because it was getting starved, or vice versa? These hardware counters can answer that and tell you which of the draw calls really was the killer performance-wise. We can give you data about memory bandwidth. You know, how many reads, how many writes, how much memory did the texture fetch unit pull over the bus? We can dig into bottlenecks in things like the input assembler or the shader unit, so you can really quickly understand where your rendering is bottlenecked and where to focus your optimization. We do have plans for similar functionality from other vendors, which is going to be coming soon. And it's not going to be the same counters across all GPUs, because at this level of performance analysis, you know, it really doesn't make sense to try and normalize things. The architectures are all different, so the set of counters is going to be determined by the vendor. So I'm going to show you what we have running on NVIDIA. This is using the NVIDIA GPU in my Surface Book. So going up here, at the moment I have the execution duration counter visible. If I click this counters button, I get a selection of other counters. There are a few that come built into Pix. Without, you know, these will work the same across any GPU. The ones that start with D3D. We have counters to say things like how many samples were rejected by the depth test, how many samples were actually rendered. I can dig into things like how many compute shader invocations or how many primitives were rendered. Some of those are interesting. I'm actually going to turn on rasterized primitives and rendered primitives. And that will immediately give you, the difference between those is primitives that failed culling tests or back-facing tests. So you can see rasterized primitives for this draw call was pretty high, but rendered primitives was actually zero because that draw was completely culled. But more interestingly, if I scroll down, we have a whole set of NVIDIA categories. There's about 300 of these total for all different areas of the pipeline. So the kind of thing I can look at if I expand the texture units, I could say how many bytes were read by the texture fetches. Turn that counter on, and now that column is populated with data. A really interesting one is the elapsed cycles average. This is somewhat similar to the execution duration that we can collect, so I'm going to reorder that and put it next to execution duration, just so we can view those two together. What this will tell you is, if you had work running in parallel, how much time was really spent on that. So if I go down here and select, say, this dispatch that had no parallelism at all, you'll see that Pix measured its duration as about 1,000. And the elapsed cycle is extremely similar, like just moderately smaller, but pretty much that's what the GPU was doing. So the time taken for that call and the number of cycles spent on that call are the same. If I go into this pile of work that's stacked, where a whole bunch of stuff was running simultaneously, you'll see it's extremely different. The execution duration is inordinately higher than the elapsed cycles, which makes sense. Those cycles were being spread between a whole bunch of different work. The insight you can get from this, though, is now you can say out of these stacked draws, which actually all look about the same amount of time, they all started more or less simultaneously, and they all finished more or less about the same amount of time. But they didn't all take the same amount of work. If I scroll through this list, like that guy actually spent a lot of cycles processing. The one after it took the same amount of time, but nowhere near the amount of cycles. So immediately, I have a huge clue to where to go to optimize to look at that draw in particular as something that was expensive in a way that the others were not. And there's no way D3D without help from the driver could really determine that kind of thing, because all it can see is, hey, these started, the time passed, they all finished. We need these counters to understand why that was the case. Another super valuable set of counters is under SOL. SOL is NVIDIA speak for speed of light, which means a hypothetical throughput in a universe where if a particular part of the GPU was achieving its absolute kind of maximum, how much work could it get done? And these counters will tell you what percentage of that theoretical maximum was actually achieved. So I could look at the input assembler speed of light, and I'll turn that one on. And I will also turn on the texture speed of light. That one takes a little longer to collect because we have to do a number of passes to gather all the data. So this is interesting. This is data that we could not gather in a timing capture type of universe because it's actually synthesized from several different counters that need to be collected one after another. So we actually need a system where we're able to record a trace and then play it back multiple times to be able to infer this kind of information. So now if I go look at these counters, you see a whole bunch more numbers. I can click the column headers to sort by them. If I scroll to the top, see most of the input assembler utilization is pretty low. Near the top, I have a couple that were in the 70s. So those were getting pretty close to actually keeping the input assembler busy. And there's a big clue to why if you look at the rasterized and rendered primitives. The ones where the input assembler were busy were all where rendered primitives were zero. Take a wild guess, they all just got clipped. So there was no pixel shader work going or rasterization going on at all there. If I look at the texture speed of light, this one's interesting. We had a couple of draw calls that were 100% utilizing the texture unit, and a bunch that were 95. Most of them are pretty low. So then I can jump for those guys, jump back to the pipeline state and say, okay, why was that one so high? And I can go look at that draw call and see what was its shader doing. That one only had one texture bound. It's a pretty big texture. Does that have mipmaps? Let's go look at its description. Yeah, maybe that texture is too big. Maybe we should look at some way to reduce bandwidth on that. Go and inspect its sample. Okay, that was anisotropic. Maybe we should think about perhaps not doing anisotropic filtering on that draw call. So you can really get a ton of insight from these counters to dive deeper than has previously been possible. And yeah, we're really excited to be able to enable this. I think it's going to be a great thing for debugging on PC. So this is approaching the end of our talk. Max, do you want to talk to these?
Mostly this is just some guidance on where to go for additional resources. And keep watching the DirectX developer blog. We'll provide more links to YouTube videos and other just instruction on how to use GBV and debug layers.
Yeah. You don't want to read out the links? Very exciting.
MSDN has wonderfully audible links. I think I'll leave the photographs to the slides.
Yeah. We have a few more links for PICs. You'll notice the PICs information is not on MSDN, so its links are slightly more readable, but I'm still not going to bother reading them out. This is where to go get to download PICs, add the event runtime to your game. If you want to see more of this, we're going to be over in the lobby bar demoing PICs in about half an hour's time, so head over there and see Brian and me. Come ask us questions. We'll be here after this talk also, but we will have longer over in the lobby bar. The other link I really wanted to highlight is the bottom one there. We are incredibly interested in your feedback on PICs. If it's not working for you, we want to fix that. If there's things you think it should be doing that it's not, we would love to know about that. Of the two updates we've shipped so far, probably about half of the features in them were requests from customers who've been using it already. So we really do listen to all of that feedback. Please send it, keep it coming. And I would also like to add, and please do fill in your evaluation forms. That's also great feedback for us.
To that is also the debug layers. There's a link there for the forums where you can submit bugs as well. We've already produced as well like three updates to the debug layers shipped in summer last year, and we can ship on a monthly cadence as bugs come in and fix them.
Yeah, I think the takeaway for both of these products is if you send us bugs, you can expect a response that's better than wait for the next version of Windows next year. We plan on updating them often, so it's worth sending us bugs.